Morning, everyone. I'm going to call the Subcommittee on Employee Relations to order. Today is May 8th. And we are going to start with just quick introductions. If you would just state who you are and what your district is, and including the staff around the table. And I'm Representative O'Neill, and I will be acting as interim chair until we vote. Start down here with Mr. Weeks.
My name's Ben Weeks, and I work with House Research.
Madam Chair, members, my name's Brian Cook, and I'm the Republican Caucus Researcher for this Subcommittee.
State Representative Deborah Hillstrom, I represent District 40B, and I think the longest-serving member of this Subcommittee now.
Leon Lilly, House Member, North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale. Good morning.
Jeff Howell, District 13A, over by Cold Spring.
Steve Druskowski, House District 21B, portions of Wabasha, Winona, Dodge, and Goodhue Counties.
Michelle Benson, Senate District 31, Anoka, Sherburne, and Asante County. This will be my fifth year on the Subcommittee.
I'm State Senator Scott Newman. I am the newbie on the committee. Happy to be here. The counties that I represent are west of the Twin Cities area, McLeod, Meeker, Sibley, and one little tiny township in Wright County, which I absolutely love.
Senator Mark Grant, representing Senate District 32, most of Chisago County except the southeast portion, and most of Isani County except the southwest portion. Also glad to be on the committee.
Hi, Senator Chris Eaton. I represent Brooklyn Center in the southern half of Brooklyn Park.
State Senator Eric Simonson, representing most of the city of Duluth.
Stephanie James, Senate Counsel.
Thank you. And I did miss one staff over here. I'm sorry. And you are?
Casey Kirkovich, LCC.
Okay, the first order of business is to elect officers. Is there a nomination on the floor for chair?
I will nominate Representative Marion O'Neill for chair.
Is there a second?
Second.
Great. Any discussion? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, we spoke before the hearing, and I attempted to speak to you last week that I was very concerned about the what I was seeing happen with the agenda, and my concern over what was beginning to take shape about today's hearing. And so I reached out to you to say, can we talk about what's happening and what's going on? I've also seen a press release about what's supposedly going to happen during this testimony today, although we have not really had that opportunity to discuss it, and apparently there's a press conference at 10:30. Members, I have served on this subcommittee as the longest serving member. I have never seen what's about to happen today happen in this subcommittee ever, and the politicalization of these particular issues. It's any issue, whether it's this one or any other. I believe that this SER subcommittee, our role is to review contracts and make a recommendation to the legislature about whether they should approve them or not approve them. This has never.
There's a motion before the body. Representative Hillstrom, with all due respect, I believe these issues can be resolved outside the motion, unless you believe they, could you please explain to us how they're pertinent to the motion?
Yes, thank you, Representative Senator Benson. Representative O'Neill and I have had a long time in this body working together in a bipartisan fashion. And this is the first time that that's not happened on any issue here, even when we disagree on a subject. And I'm making this statement because if she's going to be chair, I want to know if this is going to be the process that this subcommittee is going to take under her leadership for the next 2 years in determining whether or not I can vote for her as a chair. We have had unprecedented time that we have worked together, and I'm hoping that that's going to continue. But the way that this is being laid out today causes me to question that, and I don't want to just be a no without hearing from Representative O'Neill on whether or not she anticipates this is going to be the culture under her leadership that we're going to see in this subcommittee.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. I'm going to just respond very briefly, as we did offline as well. You know, this is a difficult time of the legislature, and I do serve on seven committees, and I've taken on additional roles as the Assistant Majority Leader. So unfortunately, I didn't take the time or have the time to respond back to you as to what the course of action was going to be today. But very briefly, what the course of action is going to be is there are several court cases that are pending in specific regards to the PCA contract and unionization. And I felt it the obligation of the committee to hear those details and that information before we weigh in on the PCA contract. And of course, we know that the time is being truncated because we have to go into session, the Senate has to go into session at 10 a.m. So with the truncated time, there isn't time to fairly allow both sides to bring their concerns before us, before we decide further on the contract. And so my apologies to you that I did not have the time to discuss this. And we have had a longstanding relationship and worked on many issues and authored together many, many great pieces of legislation. And I would like that to continue. My intention was not to, you know, do something highly political. I wanted information to the subcommittee so that we can make a determination and hear both sides. And as you can see, the room is very full, so there are many people that are very concerned about this issue as well and what's happened, and I really want an update from those that are bringing those cases as to what's in the cases. And obviously we're not here to decide merit, we're here to just hear the information, and I felt it important for the subcommittee to be able to hear that and be and air that publicly before we talked about the contract. I wish we had had more time. We could have brought the contract up as well. We will have, hopefully next week on Monday, it's hard for you on Mondays, I recognize, but anyway, that is my intention, and to continue to work with you in the right way that we have. And I apologize to you for not being able to get that personal contact face-to-face. I was engaged in some other negotiations.
All right, thank you.
Any other discussion? Senator Benson?
Madam Chair, I'll renew my motion to nominate Representative Marion O'Neill as Chair of the Subcommittee on Employee Relations.
Very good. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Okay. Do we have nominations for the Vice Chair? Okay. Senator Newman?
Madam Chair, I would nominate Senator Benson for Vice Chair.
Any second?
I'll second that motion.
Senator Corn. Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, are there nominations on the floor for Secretary? Well, I will nominate, I'm going to nominate my dear friend, Representative Hillstrom, in a show of support in collaboration with you. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Moving on. All right, we have the subcommittee rules, and I'm going to defer to our staff, Mr. Huebinger, if you would go over the rules.
Madam Chair and members, in your packets are a set of proposed rules for the next 2-year period. There are no proposed changes in them, The rules follow the statute that governs the responsibility of the LCC to review and approve labor contracts, which has been delegated by an LCC resolution to this subcommittee. So these rules follow the statute and that resolution. I point out a couple of things. On line 5 on page 1, it indicates the officers whom you just elected. Item 3.1 indicates that the chair will give 3 days notice whenever practical of any meeting. Item 2.1 just above that indicates that the chair alternates every 2 years between a member of the Senate and the House. For this 2-year period, the chair comes from the House. On page 2 of the rules, item 4, beginning on line 7 and continuing through the next for all of page 3, just governs the procedures by which the subcommittee reviews and acts on labor contracts. It closely follows the statute, and it's all very pro forma. It indicates that the subcommittee reviews not only the labor contracts, but arbitration awards, compensation plans for unrepresented employees, and then salaries proposed by the governor for heads of state agencies. The last notable item is on the page 4, line 5, item 6, voting requirements. That for a vote to be successful, it requires a majority of the members present. So this subcommittee acts like a committee. It does not act like a conference committee. It's a majority of the quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Huebinger. Any discussion on the rules? Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hubinger, is there anything in this rule, in this set of rules, that precludes us from digging in deeper than we have in the past to some of these issues? Matter of fact, I find it quite refreshing to see an agenda that actually starts to dig into one particular issue. It seems in the past we simply have had these contract proposals come before us in a flat-footed way, and not having had the opportunity to do the due diligence that we need to do in order to get into the details of the history and operations of each particular issue. So my question, Mr. Hubinger, is there anything that precludes us from doing anything like we're doing on the agenda today? And then also, would it be beneficial for us to amend the rules either today or in the future to outline kind of similar similar policy or practice of the subcommittee?
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair, Representative Raskowski, the rules on page 2, item 4, follow some language in the commission statute 3.855, which a copy of which is in your packet as well, that provides for the Commission of Management and Budget to provide an update on the bargaining, and the Assistant Commissioner is scheduled to provide an update shortly. The statute also provides for the subcommittee to be able to provide advice to the department in those negotiations.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you. So, Mr. Hubinger, is there anything precluding us and then from you know, going into more in depth in more of a kind of an information gathering capacity either today or in the future? Is there anything in these rules precluding that? I guess that'd be the question at this point.
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Representative Druskowski, there's nothing in the rule of statute that precludes that kind of participation.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Hubinger, what would be our process for amending the rules either today and or in the future in order to explicitly put some language in to provide that would be something that we do on a regular basis or on a as-needed basis?
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Representative Druskowski, there is a provision in the rules, item 8 on page 4, line 23, that indicates that the rules can be amended with two-thirds concurrence of the membership.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Hubinger. I'll just point out, too, in statute under 3.855, subdivision 4, it says commission shall continually monitor the state civil service system provided for in chapter 43A, rules of the commissioner management budget, and the collective bargaining process provided for in chapter 179A as applied to state employees. So Madam Chair and Mr. Hubinger, members, it looks like that may actually include it there. And then it also says under subdivision 4, the commission shall research and analyze the need for improvements in these statutory sections. So members, it looks like actually it's already provided for in statute, so maybe no further inquiry. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Druskowski. Any other further discussion? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hubinger, with the exception of the date that's outlined in red on the proposed rules, are these the same rules that the committee has operated under in the immediate past session?
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, that's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hubinger.
Any further discussion? Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair, and so I've been on this committee for a while as well, and is there any usually we don't get into the rules. I suppose it's like the house where you can just kind of make up rules as we go. Oh, by the way, I find it interesting that you won't give Representative Druskowski a microphone. I'm not sure. We had nothing to do with that.
Thank you, Representative Lee, for pointing that out.
But I don't know if we could, if we need to do that in more seats, but I am enjoying that one. I think Mr. Cook did that, but we're not going to point fingers. But anyways, over the weekend, I hear Maury Lanning and on the radio, and he was talking about the Viking Stadium, and it just seems like, and he just kind of talked about how we, as members, often work together. And I remember when he was chair of this committee, and I carried some of the contracts on the floor, and he just, he was just really a class act, and just, you know, those were during the plenty years, and I know this committee wasn't used as a tool for media. I don't remember us having press conferences, and I don't remember the committee, you know, just focusing on every single detail that's negotiated with the MMB. But if that's where we're going, we're game to play, I guess, too. But it's just kind of sad. I just thinking of Maury Lanning over the weekend and what a class act he was. And it's kind of a sad that the institutions have come to this.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. And just in response, I believe that we've come to an unprecedented time. When you hear the stories from the PCAs themselves, you'll see why we're taking the time to find out why there are court cases. And I believe that's unprecedented. So I hope we never have to talk about this sort of thing again. I really do. Any other discussion? Senator Simonson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question, because it's been mentioned twice now, referencing some press conference that I'm not familiar with, and I don't know if everybody in the room is familiar with that either, but maybe if somebody could just allude to what it is we're talking about, might help us, the rest of us, understand what it is that is being referenced.
Thank you, Senator Simon. I believe the advocates in the room have called a press conference, and they've invited a few of us to speak if we like, so I'll let them speak. I'll let them discuss that when they come up here.
And just to be clear, Madam Chair, advocates for?
They're the ones that have been bringing the court cases, Senator Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the rules without being amended, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Rules are adopted. Okay, now the minutes. And there are minutes from March 8th, 2016. Would someone who was at that meeting like to move those minutes?
Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Representative Lilly moves the minutes from Tuesday, March 8th, 2016. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we need to approve the minutes from August 25th, 2016. Someone who was at that meeting would like to move those minutes? Representative Lilly? Care. Senator Eaton.
I'd like to move the minutes.
Wonderful. Senator Eaton moves the minutes from August 25th, 2016. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Now the meeting minutes from November 14th, 2016. Would someone like to move those minutes?
I'll move those minutes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Benson moves the minutes from November 14th, 2016. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. Okay, now we're going to turn to a brief update of the bargaining contracts coming forward for 18 and 19. And do we have the commissioner from MMB? So if one of the testifiers would give up the seat for Deputy Commissioner from MMB, Mr. Hudson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony about the updated bargaining contracts for 18 and 19.
Madam Chair, members of the conference, good morning. My name is Edwin Hudson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Enterprise Human Capital. And this morning I'm here to provide you with a very brief background or update in terms of where we are with negotiations. Before I start, just give you just a few points of background. MMB negotiates with 9 labor units. 3 of them are covered by employees represented by ASME Council 5. 6 of the agreements cover employees who are under PELRA, which is Public Employment Labor Relations Act, and they do not have the rights to strike. So just as background. But I'd like to just start off just talking about the 2 units that we've already opened with. They represent approximately 75% of our state employees. The state and Ask Me Master. They opened up. They presented their opening proposals on April the 10th. We participated in 2 days of bargaining on April the 26th and the 27th. Our next bargaining date is May 15th. MAPE, we presented opening proposals on March the 31st. We participated in 4 days of bargaining. That was April the 11th, 12th, 25th, and the 26th. The next bargaining dates are May 17th and May 18th. Now, please keep in mind that both parties, Ask Me and MAPE, at this point, we have not submitted any proposals with respect to wages. So those economic proposals will be discussed there towards the push week, which is in June. Also, we had Insurance Coalition. That is where all of the bargaining units had a representative with management, with the state, and we talked through some of the insurance proposals. Those opening proposals were submitted on May the 1st, and we will resume those bargaining activities tomorrow, May 9th. Middle Management Association, we will begin to bargain with them on May the 11th. Ask Me Unit 8, which is our correction officers, we will begin to bargain with them on June the 7th. Ask Me Number 25, or Unit 25, which is our radio communication officers, we'll begin to bargain with them on June 15th. Now, we do not have dates at this point for MGEC, our engineers, MLEA, which is law enforcement, MNA, our nurses, and SRSEA, which is our special teachers. So I just wanted just to provide you with kind of an update with where we are. Bargaining is going very well. It's very collegial. It's very arms length. We believe in the process. It's worked for years, and it's working fine. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll just see if you have any questions.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Hudson. Any questions for this testifier? Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hudson. Would it be possible for you to share with the committee kind of a summary of those dates for each of those bargaining units? You mentioned both the past dates of the first rounds of negotiations as well as what is anticipated in the future. I guess that would be the first question. Second one would be, as additional dates are put on the calendar, would it be possible for you to share or a staff member to share with the subcommittee members, with each member, the schedule of those future negotiations?
Madam Chair, Representative Drukowski, we have shared those dates and we'll be happy to do those again. I think each meeting we've shared those dates with you and we will continue to do so. With respect to a summary from the various meetings, I suppose, yes, I can get into a little bit of it. I don't have all of my notes with me. I will tell you, when we opened up with Ask Me, Ask Me presented their inequities and was approximately 40 classes where they want us to kind of look into some situations where we think they think they may have some salary compressions. So we're going to take a look at those things. The state and unions responded to proposals. We wanted to make sure that we understood what they were proposing, and certainly we wanted to make sure that they understood what we were proposing. So the meetings in both instances, we spent quite a bit of time, much of the time, going backwards and forth, discussing the issues, making sure that each side thoroughly understood the issue and perhaps the issue behind the proposal that they were submitting.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Further questions? Representative Draskowski?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hudson.
Any other further questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, just a roadmap ahead of us. So the entire body, House and Senate, have to be on the floor at 10 a.m. So we are going to have a time certain end of this committee at 5:02 so that we can all get to our chambers. In the allotted time that we have left, I have a list of testifiers that signed up in advance, and I believe, Mr. Hubinger, you have a second list that just this that also came. In concern for the PCA contract that we'll be reviewing at a future date, hopefully a week from today, there have been court cases and concerns from those that have been unionized. And so we have a couple testifiers here this morning, and they have some additional testifiers, and they would like to update us on the process of the court cases and give some firsthand accounts of why we have these court cases. So in the allotted time that we have left, which is about 25 minutes, 27 minutes or so, I would like to give those that have signed up in advance to speak first. I'm going to give you 2 minutes maximum to speak, because we do have a lot, we have a very truncated time. At the end of that, we'll have the additional testifiers that have signed up since then from, I believe, SCIU. Okay. So the SCIU will have this testimony first, and then the SCIU response. And I don't believe we have the Bureau BMS here this morning. I know that they've had death of the commissioner, and so they've had some trouble getting information together, but we may just address that at another time. I know they don't have time to put all their information together for us. So with that, we have Kim Crockett and Doug Seaton, and if you would each state your name for the record, and I will give you, I'm not sure how long do you think it'll take to do your testimony, and then I'm just trying to think of how we do this in 25 minutes. Ms. Crockett.
Madam Chair, I'm Kim Crockett with Center of the American Experiment. With very abbreviated comments from me, I believe Doug Seaton's going to do the same, because we want to make sure that people who drove in and actually spent the night near the Capitol have time to speak to you this morning. So,
thank you, Ms. Crockett. Yes, we always take preference over those who have driven quite some ways to be here, so I appreciate you sharing that as well. So with that, I will turn it over to whoever would like to speak first, so please identify yourself for the record again and continue with your testimony.
Madam Chair, I'm Kim Crockett, Vice President with Center of the American Experiment. We have been working with a coalition of personal care attendants called MNPCA. In 2013, the legislature declared that certain home-based personal care attendants were public employees for the sole purpose of collective bargaining and no other. These PCAs are mostly women who are caring for a disabled family member, either at their home or the person with a disability. All the benefits, this is not a normal contract. All of the benefits under this program are taxpayer Medicaid dollars granted by Congress and the Minnesota legislature. They were not bargained by the SEIU or any other union. I'm going to jump forward and just say that we believe that based on LM2 filings with the federal government, that this union is skimming approximately $4.7 million from the Medicaid benefits through dues of members. I will shift and introduce to you the attorney for Minnesota PCA, MNPCA, Douglas Seaton, and then we'll introduce our guests to you this morning. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chair and members of the subcommittee. I'm Doug Seaton. I'm with the firm Seaton Peters and Revenue Work Council for Minnesota PCA, which has been seeking for a year now to have an election held so that PCAs themselves can determine if they want to continue with the representation of the SEIU. We have been stymied in that effort because we have been refused access to PCA lists for a very long time. We started 1 year ago, almost this very day, to ask for that list. We were refused. We had to go to Ramsey County Court to insist on access to the lists. We have had 7 different lists provided to us, which are different lists, ranging from something like 15,000 to 60,000 in number. The defects in those lists are extraordinary. You'll hear more from the PCAs about that very issue. In the course of seeking to get support for the election, which we believe would be supported by PCAs to see whether they want to continue with the SEIU or not, we have uncovered some serious problems, and those problems could amount to fraud. They certainly amount to mischief, misfeasance, malfeasance, something that calls into question the original election that brought the SEIU representation into being, and also call into question the lists we've been provided and the actions of the BMS that have resulted in ultimately denial of our petition for a decertification election. We now continue to be before Ramsey County Court in the data practices case, which is now on appeal to the Court of Appeals. We will file an appeal of the BMS's order, which is dismissing our petition at this stage in the seeking of the new election. So that matter is still in controversy. It will be in controversy both in Ramsey County Court in certain respects and in the Court of Appeals in other respects. But the fundamental issue is there support for the SEIU representation or not? And we have a graphic representation of why we think this is not the case. Originally, 3,543 votes were cast for the SEIU in the 2014 election. We have collected now, and we've updated the chart, 7,510 cards seeking an election, a new election for PCAs, almost more than twice as many as were cast for the SEIU in the first place. Now, there is a great deal of information before the subcommittee. We apologize for that. We have submitted all the material virtually that we've submitted to the BMS and the court. We have affidavits from all of the PCAs here and many more besides. What I'll summarize quickly as background for you so that the PCAs themselves can speak is that in the course of seeking these cards supporting a decertification election, we have found very serious and troubling facts. We have found duplicate names on the list. We have found PCAs who have indicated that they never signed a card requesting an election, yet they were counted for the showing of the election. They were also counted as approving a dues deduction from their Medicaid benefit, which they never approved, never agreed to. Many of them have tried to get out from under that so-called authorization to no avail because the SEIU has not allowed them to do that. Sometimes they've stopped going forward, they've never returned the money, but the question we think that is before the subcommittee was this election valid in the first place in 2014, or should there be an issue of whether that certification should be revoked? If not revoking the certification, should there not be a new rerun election in light of the abuses that we have uncovered in searching for support for the new election? And should there not be a decertification at the least? Typically, decertification procedures require a 30% showing from the bargaining unit involved. Now, normally, we know who those people are. We go down to the Department of Transportation, we count noses, we know who it is. Here we've been told on the one hand it's 28,000. The SEIU itself has said that it's 19,000. The list themselves include duplicate names, people who are empty lots, people who are commercial addresses. There is something funny going on here, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, members of the subcommittee. And we have asked the BMS to investigate what seems to be fraud or problems in the lists that have been given and in the election in the first place in 2014. We've been rebuffed in that effort, and that is why we come before the subcommittee seeking some form of redress in terms of the review of the contract that is before you. We think the contract should be rejected. We think, of course, the PCA should have a raise, as they always have from the legislature, but we think the contract should be rejected, and we think we should have the new election that PCA so obviously really desire to be held. And that is my testimony. Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. Our next speaker would be one of the PCAs who has been the lead PCA in the effort to get the new election held, and that is Chris Green, who is a PCA herself with her daughter, Mary.
Thank you, Mr. Seaton. We have a couple member questions before we move forward. I have Representative Hillstrom, then Howe, and then Representative Lilly as well. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, first, I just want to put on the record that this is an open shop union and that only people who want to join pay anything at all. And more importantly, those dues are no longer Medicaid money, and it is the workers' money that they have earned, and they choose to do what they wish with the money. But as each testifier comes forward, it would be great if we could get a comment on whether or not they believe the new contract should be approved or not, and if the workers should get the benefits, because that's the role of this subcommittee to decide, make a recommendation to the legislature on whether or not we should approve the new contract. And that new contract includes increasing the minimum wage to $13, faster PTO accrual, time and a half for working on holidays so that their clients can celebrate holidays with their families, training opportunities, and the complex care rate. So if they would also make their recommendation on do they believe this subcommittee should approve or deny that contract, and should the workers be entitled to the benefit that has been negotiated.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. We will ask them as they come up.
And if we could get the two that have already testified to answer that question, that would be helpful.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Mr. Seaton.
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative, it is simply not true, I'm afraid, that the Medicaid dollars are not the source of the dues money, because they are the source. The dues deduction is taken directly from the Medicaid payment that is being provided to the PCA by the agency involved. And part of the evidence you'll hear is that PCAs have not authorized that deduction, which is required by law. Every employer in this room would have to have a card that said, I want money deducted from my pay. The PCA agencies do not receive that. All they receive is a list from the SEIU of who to take the money from. And they have been unable to get their money back when they have not authorized the money. So I would have to dispute the representative's fact statement on that respect. Though I understand she has relied on others in obtaining it. It is also not true that it is an open shop. Mm-hmm. If I could reply, it is not true that it is an open shop situation, because the PCAs themselves have not signed the authorization, or they've been told that it is simply a request for information or a petition for better benefits when they've signed it. And you'll hear many of them tell you exactly what they were told at the door by SEIU representatives that unfortunately make that an incorrect statement.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I could get the answer to the question on the contract and whether or not he thinks those folks should get that, as that is the role. And Madam Chair, I did not impugn his character on what facts he may be relying on or false information he may be providing, and I would expect that this committee would not permit a testifier to impugn members' integrity here as well. Members, as you know, I am a lawyer. I do know how to read. I actually served on the committees that actually put the statute in place to allow for the unionization and the vote to take place. And so, we can have that debate here, and we can have that battle here if that's the direction the chair would like to go. I would prefer that that not happen, and that we just simply get the answers to whether or not this subcommittee should approve or deny the contract, and whether or not the workers should get the benefit that this contract calls for. That's the question before this body.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. And Mr. Seaton, with all due respect, I ask you respect all the members, and
yes,
I'm just going to lay that as a ground rule that we will not be.
Madam Chair, I think I said I knew she was relying on information provided by others.
Thank you, Mr. Seaton. I have more on the list, and then we'll come over here. So, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Seaton, I guess my question goes to, I'm wondering, is this the first contract that's going to be ratified under this union? And if not, then why is it that we're having this discussion now, and what effect will approving this contract have on the unionization and your battle with the unionization process?
Yes,
Mr. Seaton.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. This is the second, the one before you would be the second contract if it were to be approved. So the current contract expiring July 1 is the first contract between SEIU and the state with respect to the PCAs. If the contract were to be ratified, the new contract by the subcommittee and the legislature, we believe it would be asserted that we cannot proceed with our decertification election, because there's typically something called a contract bar when a contract is in place for a bargaining unit, and that stops any effort to bring a decertification election forward. We have met the window provided under the current contract. There's a window period when we can submit a petition for decertification. We met that window. We've been supplementing our showing with additional cards, as I said, to 7,510. But we are afraid if the contract were ratified, it not only would be ratifying a contract from a representative whose status as representative is in question and contention, but it would also serve as a prospective defense to stop the effort to get the election held.
Madam Chair.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, Mr. Seaton, so will there be another window, or is it forever gone for that window to challenge?
Mr. Seaton.
Madam Chair, Representative, there is only a window for a 60-day period at the end of every two-year contract. Or it can be brought when there is no contract in place. But part of our concern is that this bargaining has been hurried up on the PCA contract for SEIU so that there would be no break between the contracts, and there would be no period when the election could proceed, unless our current petition is allowed, until 2 years hence.
Representative Lilly.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just hoping the testifier would answer Representative Hillstrom's question about the pay, if you supported the folks getting the paid time off or the pay level. I don't know how people can, just to be able to spend time with their families, with days off and those sort of things. I'm a little shocked if you don't support that. And then on the election part, elections are often tricky. I'm reminded of this lady that voted for her dead mom for Trump this last election cycle, I think in North Carolina. Elections aren't always, I don't think she's going to jail, but, sometimes some of these people that we're talking about are moving. There's a lot of moving parts. At $13 an hour, they're probably not in stable housing and those sort of things. So there might be more transitions that are hard to, and I'm not saying it's perfect, but there might be some reasons why some things, a lot of moving parts. But if you could answer the question quickly, that'd be great.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Mr. Seaton, very quickly, because we are running quickly out of time, and I know we'd like to get some of these folks that have driven over in state overnight to be able to testify.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, the answer is Minnesota PCA wants an increase for PCAs. We don't believe the particulars of the contract make sense for most PCAs who are family members, but we do believe PCAs, of course, should have an increase, but the contract should not be ratified in our judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Seaton. Senator Simonson, if we could be very brief so we could have these folks come up.
Madam Chair, I'm going to hold my questions till we meet again in the interest of trying to get some public testimony.
Thank you. I'm going to have to keep calling you, Representative. I'm so sorry, Senator Simonson. We've known each other long too long in the House. All right, so if we can, let's move forward with the first testifier that's at the stand. And please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Hi, thank you. My name is Chris Green. And I am excited to be here to share with you why I'm here today. I am the lead petitioner in the fight to decertify the SEIU. Most importantly, though, I am here for my daughter, Merity. Merity is 24 years old and is a very sweet and loving young adult. She was born with Rubenstein-Tavy syndrome, and because of this, she needs a lot of care and direction throughout each day. Merity enjoys and thrives being at home with her family, and I am able to do so with her as a PCA or a personal care attendant with the help of the PCA Choice Program. This program has helped and worked for our family and many other families in Minnesota. And I want to protect and save this PCA Choice Program so that my daughter and others like her may have the quality of life that they deserve. I do not believe that the SEIU is here for our best interests, but for their own political and monetary gain. I am a mom taking care of my daughter in my own home. I am not a state employee. I am a mother. And I'm going to end it at that because I want others to speak. But I do not want the approval of your contract with the SEIU contract. I would prefer that our raises came from the legislatures and not through the SEIU. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Let's take the next testifier. We have actually former Senator Alda Kreif, his wife Carol, and Jason.
We're going to make a slight change, Madam Chair, if that's permissible, to be sure the long distance travelers can testify.
Very good, because she's come from a long distance, and I'm assuming you stayed overnight as well to be able to testify. Your name, please, and then
continue. My name is Sarah Medill. I'm from Duluth.
And continue with your testimony.
I just want to start. The SEIU showed up at my door starting March 10th, 2014. Showed up 5 times in a 2-month period. Told them I was not interested, didn't want to be in the union. They tried to get me to vote yes. Did end up sending me a ballot. I voted no and sent it back. To July 2015, I got my first check and saw that union dues were taken out of my check. Called SEIU and asked them why those were taken out since I did not sign anything to join the union. They told me that I did sign something, sent me a letter showing a card where they had forged my signature. I never signed anything that they had given me at all. They had the ballot that said that I had signed to be in the union. Called them again to ask why these union dues were being taken out. They said I signed it. That was done. Tried to get my money back. They refused to give me my money back. I had to write a handwritten letter to be removed from the union. It was harassing. I didn't want to be in it. They forged my signature. I signed nothing with them. And it just got to a point of, I felt like I was being harassed to join. I voted no. And I'm currently unemployed now since January 1st after losing my job from the hours being cut. It's frustrating to think that somebody is signing your name that you did not sign, something that you did not want to do, that you were being forced to do, not being able to get your money back. It's very frustrating. I was working for my sister. I'm not a state employee. It's a family. I work for my sister to help take care of her that has cerebral palsy that's not able to function for herself.
Thank you, Ms. Medill.
Thank you.
Medill. We have time for one more testifier, I'm afraid, because I do need to give some time for a response. This is why time goes so quickly. So if you could state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
My name is Holly Hembry. I'm from Duluth.
Can you get a little bit closer to the mic, please?
Sorry. My name is Holly Hembry. I'm from Duluth. I've worked in the healthcare system for quite some time. I started working as a PCA a while ago. In about 2013, I heard about the union coming. I was cool, excited, a union. I met a representative, came to my door when I was grocery shopping with my client. She's also my stepmom. She wouldn't let me in the door. She said that she'd been waiting there. It was the third time she'd been to the house. She was very animate about what vote I was going to give, and I didn't give her one at that time. I wanted to speak to someone. I spoke to a couple of people over the phone. Eventually, I tried to pin down what my benefits were going to be if I were to say yes to the vote, and I got circled answers. The wages they indicated I was making more than they were going to originally bargain for. I told them I was going to vote no. I looked for my ballot. They said they were going to be bright green cards. I looked and never received a ballot at any time to vote. When I called to ask about it, they said that I must have received one and missed it. I noticed that dues were being taken out of my check because I was refinancing. And when I called to ask about, when did this start, I didn't realize that the thing had gone through and voted. They said, you have to vote out. It wasn't something you vote in for. So I called the 800 number so that I could stop having dues taken out. They continued to not, so I started writing emails. They still didn't go through. I had to get my company involved because I was confused about why dues were taken out and they shouldn't be. I would recommend not voting yes to the union. I don't believe they are in the best interest of the people, client, or workers.
Thank you for your testimony. In the remaining moments, Representative Dreskowski.
Madam Chair, I would ask, we've got people who have taken time off from their jobs to be here today. If we could hear from them, and the SEIU people we could hear from at our next meeting. Can we do that? They get paid to represent their union. They're here very often in the legislature. These people have come from all over the state to speak to us here today. We can certainly continue that part of the hearing at the next meeting.
Senator Yee.
Madam Chair, there are SEIU members here who are also PCAs who have driven a long distance here to testify. I think that would be unfair.
I understand, and this is the hard part about only having an hour. So,
Madam Chair,
what I would like to do is I think we have time to hear from one person from SEIU. We have to leave at 5:02 because we have to be on the floor. So,
Madam Chair.
Ms. Crockett.
Senator Al DeKreif, his wife Carol DeKreif, a PCA, and their son have driven up here and spent the night in hopes of speaking with you this morning. Could we please make a very brief time for them to do that?
I understand. I don't know how many other members would be willing to stay the last 5 minutes before we run to session, but will you stay? Mm-hmm. Okay. I apologize. This is, the hour went very, very quickly. We will hear from former Senator DeCrieff, and then we will go to SCIU. Welcome, former Senator DeCrieff. If you would state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Carol DeCrieff. I'm the mother of Jason DeCrieff. Jason was born with cerebral palsy 37 years ago and has lived with my husband and I for that time. I'm one of Jason's PCAs, and my husband Al is Jason's legal guardian. My husband is a former state legislator, and I will ask him to testify on behalf of our family.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good morning. Jason was about 6 months old when we learned that he had cerebral palsy, and I knew nothing about it at the time. Jason is intelligent, uses his electric wheelchair to get around, and computer to communicate. But he needs 24/7 care for feeding, bathing, and bathrooming. We're blessed to have Carol as a PCA for him, and we also have four other PCAs that help take care of him. I've helped with all of the care for Jason over the years, but I believe my wife Carol has earned her wings with her dedication to his care. I was watching closely as we learned that the SEIU wanted to unionize PCAs in Minnesota. One day I learned on the news that a vote was taken and PCAs would be unionized. I questioned Carol if she had received a ballot and voted. She did not. I also asked each of Jason's other four PCAs if they received ballots. They did not. Then I called the organization that our PCAs worked through and asked if all of Jason's PCAs should have received ballots, and the answer was yes. All five of Jason's PCAs should have received ballots, and none of them were given the opportunity. I believe the SEIU vote to unionize PCAs was fraudulent, as I have learned other PCAs were also not given the opportunity to vote. If for no other reason than due to this fraud, PCAs should be given the opportunity to vote again. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator DeCrieff. We are just debating around the table whether or not to possibly continue or actually to recess and come back at a later time today. Senator Newman.
Madam Chair, I believe that the plan in the Senate is for us to go on the floor at 10 and then recess and go into caucus. At least from my standpoint, with respect to the folks who have driven here from out of town, be they with the union or otherwise, I would prefer to keep going and listen to what these folks have to say.
Okay, and let me see from this side. Same?
Madam Chair, I actually
Represent Hillstrom.
We actually have Represent Cornish's committee with a very important bill that will be debated for what? So we just keep going.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. So it is the wish of the committee to continue. And at this point, I would like to bring up someone from SCIU to start kind of going back, allowing them some time, and then we'll come back to, we'll kind of go back and forth then a little bit. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Dolores Flynn. I am the responsible party for my 46-year-old son. I have been his primary caregiver for 44 years since he suffered a traumatic brain injury at the age of 2. 16 years ago, he had a massive brain hemorrhage, leaving him a total care patient in our home. He requires 24-hour-a-day care. His care is so complex that his stepfather and I are no longer capable of caring for him alone. He has devoted home health care workers who provide compassionate and quality care for him. This allows him to retain his dignity and his place in society. With the current care crisis, low wages and no benefits, finding quality people is near impossible. These are not entry-level positions. Seniors and people with disabilities across Minnesota, our families and our loved ones, are facing a care crisis. SEIU Healthcare Minnesota is fighting for solutions to solve this crisis. The second contract is for better wages, training, and paid time off to help solve the shortage of home care workers. There are not enough home care workers to provide care to all the seniors and people with disabilities who want to stay in their homes. This crisis is only going to get worse with the coming of the baby boomers. Many of the disabled and elderly in need of these services rely on caregivers coming into their homes to provide these services. These caregivers have to make a living for themselves and for their families. To my family and to the thousands of families across the state, home care is not something we would use for political gain. It is personal and matters too much to the people we love. The callousness towards the poor, the elderly, and the disabled in this day and age is beyond reprehensible. MNPCA's efforts and attacks, if successful, would move this industry backwards. They aren't going to help improve care for my son, Scott. Their attacks offer no solutions to the thousands of Minnesotans who need quality care to stay in their homes. Our families and caregivers need dignity, not ideological attacks. If this state legislature ratifies the contract, we will be moving towards a solution to a care crisis that is in crisis. I hope you will support families like mine across the state who simply want a better life for the people that we love and take care of. Thank I'm going to pass around some pictures of my son.
Thank you, Ms. Flynn. And I saw, I've just informed from the leadership that the only committees that are allowed to meet while we're in session is conference committee. So we are not allowed by rule to meet while we're in session, unfortunately. So we will recess and we will come back and we will all figure out when we can continue, because it's a very important conversation and I appreciate everyone coming. So as soon as we figure out a time certain to be back between here, yes, I believe we'll come back here. So we are in recess and we will let you know when we come back.